Good morning, my OA fellows and family. I am Judy, a compulsive overeater, and I was on a meeting yesterday and I heard somebody say they were an industrial strength compulsive overeater, and that was me. I started, you know, I read, we get really good at whatever we practice. And since I was very little, I was a compulsive overeater and I practiced it every day. And my capacity for volume increased every day. I'm a pure volume eater. Quality of food never meant anything to me. The cheaper, the better, so I could get more. It was always about more for me. And I'm going to just kind of weave into some of my story with the promises. And when I was thinking about the promises, I thought, you know, it almost seems like we're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness is like the header. And all the other promises are bullet points that fall underneath of it. Because when I look at them, I'm like, yeah, they're all new freedoms and new happinesses. So I grew up in a, I don't know, food was just used to pacify me. And I do believe I was addicted to dieting as much as I was addicted to food. And where people say, you know, food was the solution, for me, dieting was really the solution. Let me just get the right diet. And some of you have heard bits of my story. I was put on my first diet at 7. I went to diet camp for 2 months that summer, and then I went for 9 summers in a row. So my whole, until I was a senior in high school, you know, it was 2 months every summer. They're going to keep Judy on a diet. Then when she gets home, 10 months for the rest of the year, let's try to keep Judy on a diet. And, you know, I learned at such a young age to be a liar and a thief because I wanted more food. So I stole from the refrigerator and I learned to lie and say, no, I did not eat it. I had no idea I was learning how to be a liar and a thief and a scam artist because I could scam. So I thought every diet I was ever on. And so what a rude awakening when you come to OA and you can't cheat on your food plan. Like there's no, for me, I can't have unlimited anything. So this new freedom and this new happiness, life as a compulsive overeater growing up was, looking back, it really was prison. I was so consumed by the size of my body at such a young age that I always had to wear a sweater that hid the back of myself. For some reason, I thought the size of my butt could start World War III if somebody saw it. I was terrified for people to see what I look like. And that shame, that hiding. And I was always seeking for something to make me feel better. If it wasn't the food, it was people. Honestly, people's like my second addiction, you know. I would get hooked on people and think they were the solution for me. So I don't hide what I look like anymore. You know, I also had to go through a painful pride stage when that first winter I could wear my jeans tucked in my boots. And I remember thinking, oh, is there anything greater in life than I can achieve than this? And this is why I'm in recovery. I had a lot of vain goals. Or wearing my shirt tucked in my jeans. So the new freedom, I am not my body size. My body size is not my identity. And that had to be one of the greatest, hardest things to let go of. Whether I was fat or normal size. Hi, I'm Judy, I'm fat. Hi, I'm Judy, I'm a normal body size. And thinking being a normal body size, which I've been for a few years now, was the ticket to life. I thought everybody would instantly like me. I'd get a promotion. Everybody would want to be my friend. And none of it happened. If anything, I probably just shunned people because I was so filled with pride and ego because I had this new body. So new freedoms for me include things like when I do fly, which I haven't now for a little bit, I no longer have to carry a personal seatbelt extender. And, you know, I lived in La La Land because I would do all these things that I thought were hiding how fat I was. And I have some pictures. And, you know, it would be like I'd sit on the plane and put on my seatbelt extender and be like, oh, look, I don't need a seatbelt extender. I must be normal. And I couldn't open up my gas cap without opening up the car door to lean down. So I'd open up my gas cap before I left for my house. And then I'd pull into the gas station and say, like, oh, look, I don't need to open up my door. Like all these things to make it look like I wasn't obese. I lived life as a in big black clothing. Purposely wore purple today so it wasn't black. We will not regret the past, and I wish to shut the door on it. You know, regretting the past was a hard thing to let go of. And one thing I realized is these promises all come true, but I have to be willing to receive them. You know, how to really be willing to receive God's forgiveness and let it go for things that I've done in the past. And some of those things I did in relapse, and some of those things I did in recovery. And we've all done things, but I was definitely a thief, a liar, and a cheater. I was not a nice person. I was manipulative, very self-seeking, very selfish. Selfishness still comes up. Boy, is that a hard one to let go of. It comes up all the time. And I love where it says we will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. You know, I'm going to understand what those words mean. And I do get them. I do get them, and I lose them as quickly as when I get an email from a sponsee who tells me some food behavior she did. Right away, my mind is racing. How am I going to fix her? So I'm going to show you some pictures. In high school, my weight started blossoming. When I went to college, I probably got up to 300 pounds for the first time because one time is not enough. I bottomed out in this disease in my early 20s, although I didn't come to OA before my 30th birthday. Actually, this month came, I think it was 33 or 34 years ago. And I specifically wanted to speak today because I believe it was Sunday. I have 9 years. So it took me a long time to get to where I am, right? I've been in 33, 34 years, but my bottoming out was where, and I don't know how big I got, but I do know it was well over 300 pounds, and I did not go out of the house for 2 years. And I used to say I'm agoraphobic, but I'd gotten so big, I was so embarrassed by the size of my body. Like many of us, maybe not. I was made fun of as a kid. I went to a very small private school, so it's obvious if somebody was making fun of you, it was in front of the entire class. And made fun of as I got older too. You know, it's hard and it's painful. And I'll tell you, one of the greatest pleasures was to meet so many people in the rooms who are also picked last to be on the sports team in school. And I think, you know, I could start a whole anonymous group, you know, for being picked last, or nobody ever wanted to sit with me on the school bus anonymous. And so I know I'm jumping around, but one of the other freedoms that was amazing was coming into OA and people could share freely, oh, I weigh 300 pounds, like it was no big deal. And I never told anybody my weight ever, ever, ever. So I bottomed out in my 20s, early 20s. I did not believe in God, but I know it had to be the hand of God. When I woke up one morning, I just put myself on a diet, enough of a diet that I felt comfortable to go out of the house. And I actually dieted my way down to like the 220s, which was pretty amazing. And then I saw a show on bulimia in the late 80s, and I'm like, oh, wow, this is the solution to everything. So I became bulimic for about 5 years, purged every single thing that went into my body, got addicted to laxatives because I was convinced they couldn't get all the food out. And as I said, I was a real lazy bulimic because it was just so much work to be a bulimic. So I went back up to 300 pounds and I came into OA. So I will tell you that my first recovery, I lost quite a bit of weight, probably about 140 pounds. And I don't have a before picture, but I want to show you what I look like in my after picture. So this is of my first recovery. This is my third. So this is not my husband. This is my father. And you see, I'm a very normal body size, right? Like I look pretty normal, happy. Have you know, I was already starting to relapse before that picture. I gained 10 pounds before my wedding. And then after 6 years of being married, you'll see what I look like in the first picture. I've more than doubled my weight. And I think in our country, this is what we call switch and bait. My husband thought he was marrying the woman in the photo, and this is actually who he married. In the middle was, I think, coming in before this recovery, and then that is me today, just taken for the holidays. So and I do show pictures, especially to give people some hope who have a lot of weight to lose. And since the height of my first relapse, I'm down about 170 or so pounds. And I've been maintaining a healthy body weight for a few years now, which kind of boggles my mind. I don't try to figure it out. So I want to talk about this last problem. We'll suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. And the cornerstone of my recovery has to be on that promise. Because if I think I'm doing this, I'm dead. It's like learning how to ride a bicycle and you take off the training wheels. And if you think too hard about it, you're falling. You're trying to figure out how to stay on a bike. God, my relationship with God has become the most important factor in my life, like it says in We Agnostics. And I was such a non-believer. I wasn't just a non-believer. I was so sacrilegious. I made fun of people who believed in God. I was the late 70s, and I don't know if anybody ever remembers the whole punk rock thing. I was very invested in that because we were all outcasts. I carved crosses into my arm, wore rosary beads because it was the cool thing to do. No idea what any of it meant. And ironically enough, I was raised Jewish. I can't say I was raised Jewish because we had no religion. My religion was the only time I did something wrong, God will punish you. That was the only religion I had. But there were snippets of God in my life. And in my first recovery, I had a very, very powerful awakening. And I did convert and became a Christian. Actually, I first became a Catholic because, oh my God, who wouldn't want to go to Mass every day? It was like an OA meeting every day. And I got obsessed with the priest. And, you know, this is after I lost all my weight. I've been abstinent like 5 years. And, I'm thinking the priest doesn't like me because he must be gay. Not that he's a priest. This is where my mind went. And I will tell you, one of the reasons I definitely relapsed was I never looked at my defects in my first or my second recovery. Defects were truly running my life. I loved Step 12, was sponsoring a million people, but don't ask me to look at my behaviors because I was too invested in some of them, the main one being my obsession with other people. So somewhere in this recovery, I would say a few years ago, I realized for the first time that God was really doing for me what I could not do for myself. And that encompassed understanding what the word grace meant, which I never knew. People would say, but for the grace of God, go I. And it went boop, right over my head, had no idea what they were talking about until I realized that I have such a loving and forgiving God, he does not care one thing that I did, or I would not be sitting here truly in the best place I've ever been in my life. I have, as I say, done some of my worst sinning after I became a Christian. So believing in God never kept me abstinent, never kept me sin-free. I just worked so hard to destroy every good thing in my life, including my marriage, which is a miracle, which is better than it's ever been. And I remember, and here's how powerful the grace of God is, because I don't deserve every this. I remember I wanted to make an amends to my husband in some way, except not to do so would injure them or others. And I started to say, God, remember a few years, this was a while ago, remember a few years ago when, you know, things were so hard. He goes, you know, Judy, I don't remember it at all. That was the grace of God, and nothing's ever been mentioned since. So God's grace, I don't deserve any of this. I had to learn that I cannot earn God's love. I tried so hard. Let me do 12 readings in the morning and 12 writings and spend more time in prayer till I can't wait for it to be done. God keeps teaching me, and this is a real freedom, do less. And I think it's with Mother Teresa who said, do small things with great love. And I wanted to do many things with little love. It was always about volume in everything I did. I could never be satisfied with whatever I had, with anything. And like many of us, focusing on the one person who I thought did not like me, and how could I get them to like me? I can't do that today. So another freedom is I no longer go to my husband or other people for what they can't give me. It has to come from God or myself. I expected my husband to be a miracle worker and to make me feel instantly happy and good about myself, and it just wasn't happening. I'll also tell you, I met my husband in these rooms, which I don't know if I recommend marrying another compulsive overeater. We both relapsed, sometimes separately. I got it, Bridget, thanks. 5 minutes. Okay. Sometimes separately, sometimes together. He's not in the rooms today. I tried to make him come back. I brought him to 2 OA conventions. He's just not interested. So I got to mind my own business. I want to tell him how to eat. I got to mind my own business. So what else do I want to say? The self-pity is gone. Probably my greatest fear today is still of people. When I realized last night that I was going to speak to them, like, why did I ever want to do this? I mean, that's how I just react, because I had in my head, perform in some way. And what I work on daily is just being my authentic true self. And I learned that from others in the room. I just didn't know how to do that. And I'll tell you, when we first came to Zoom, and I remember the first meeting I hosted, I used to go to this 7:15 meeting every day from New York City. So that first meeting that I hosted, it was like I was going to a Broadway opening. I had on this big fancy shirt, full face of makeup, jewelry, this headband with this rhinestone flower in it. And I was playing a part. Although I did, you know, of course, I'm in pajama bottoms and slippers, but I did try to, you know, make a little whatever. So the only thing I want to end with is that this program really does work. If what you're doing and if you're still eating and picking up, then what you're doing is not working. And I encourage you to do something different. Get a sponsor, period. And then get a sponsor who's really working their program and really esteems abstinence. My sponsor, who is a rock star in my eyes, I'm blessed to have her. And I am in my third sponsor in this recovery. And I'm grateful for each one I had. But, you know, my sponsor is almost 80, and she's got a long, long abstinence and has been maintaining over 200-pound weight loss for like 20 years. Does service, runs me in circles in the amount of service she does. But, you know, she says, I have to want abstinence and recovery more than I want to breathe. And I need to hear that. I cannot have a sponsor who said I had a slip and it's okay, you know, because with my first sponsor, I was terrified of her, and she was picking up, and I still stayed with her because I was afraid to leave her. That was definitely my fear of people. But sponsorship, it's no joke. We can't sponsor this ourselves. And I've heard if you sponsor yourselves, you're having a fool for a sponsor. Why would I want a compulsive overeater to sponsor a compulsive overeater who's active? I have heard that the fellowship is just as important in the 12 steps. So fellowship, I work all the tools every day. And I do those 3 outreach calls, sometimes more. I pick up the phone and I call. It's important in my recovery. Sometimes, I mean, I call plenty of people who never call me back. I've learned to just, I'm doing it because it's what my program tells me I got to do. Begin your day with some kind of prayer time, even if it's just good morning, higher power. I have no idea who you are, but I'm going to surrender this day. I have different prayers. I've been trying to diversify how I pray. One of the real freedoms I've gotten, I have to tell you, is I do that set aside prayer every morning, and it's changed my life. And you can Google the set aside prayer. I had no idea God was going to set aside not having to work out 6 days a week. Sometimes it's 5. It could be less. I didn't work out yesterday, and I'll probably just stay physically active in the house today. I don't go by the clock, how long I have to exercise. I thought it had to be a certain amount of time. I do weigh and measure all of my food. I'm addicted to volume. Even, and a big turning point in my recovery, I'm just going to wind up, because I'm out of time, was when I started putting my vegetables and fruit on the digital scale and not in a cup, because I could shove a cup, probably 3 cups of cooked vegetables into 1 cup. So this program is really about honesty for me. I got to be as honest as I can. I do a detailed nightly review for my sponsor every night. It can't be about shame. It can't be about, oh my God, look what I did. I mean, sometimes I'll email my sponsor and say, I'm so embarrassed, but here's what I did or here's what I thought. So I hope some of this made sense. I have no idea. I was all over the place, but thank you so much.